Osho began Bhairav Tantra, Volume 1, The Book of the Secrets, a new commentary, Discourse Number 34, given in Bombay, India.
Before I take your questions, some other points have to be clarified. Because those points will help you to understand more what Tantra means. Tantra is not a moral concept. It is neither moral nor immoral. It is amoral. It is a science. Science is neither. Your moralities and concepts concerning moral behavior are irrelevant for Tantra. Tantra is not concerned with how one should behave. It is not concerned with ideals. It is concerned basically what is, what you are. This distinction has to be understood deeply. Morality is concerned with ideals. How you should be, what you should be. Therefore, morality is basically condemning. You are never the ideal. So you are condemned. Every morality is guilt creating. You can never become the ideal. You are always lagging behind. The gap will always be there because the ideal is the impossible. And through morality, it becomes more impossible. The ideal is there in the future and you are here what you are. And you go on comparing. You are never the perfect man. Something is lacking. You feel guilt. You feel a self-condemnation. One thing, Tantra is against condemnation because condemnation can never transform you. Condemnation can only create hypocrisy. So what you are not, you try, you pretend to sow. Hypocrisy means you are the real man, not the ideal man, but you pretend to sow that you are the ideal man. Then you have a split within you. You have a false face. The unreal man is born. And Tantra is basically a search for the real man, not for the unreal man. Every morality creates hypocrisy. Of necessity, it will be so. Hypocrisy will remain with morality. It is part of it, the shadow. This will look paradoxical because moralists are the men who condemn hypocrisy most. And they are the creators of it. And hypocrisy cannot disappear from earth unless morality disappears. They both will exist together. They are aspects of the same coin. Because morality gives you the ideal and you are not the ideal. That's why the ideal is given to you. You start feeling you are wrong. And that wrongness is natural. It is given to you. You are born with it. And you cannot do immediately anything about it. You cannot transform it. It is not so easy. You can suppress it. That's easy. So two things you can do. You can create a false face. You can pretend something you are not. That saves you. In the society, you can move more easily, more conveniently. And inwardly, you have to suppress the real, because the unreal can impose only if the real is suppressed. So your reality goes on moving downwards into the unconscious, and your unreality becomes your conscious. Your unreal part becomes more prominent, and the real recedes back. You are divided. And the more you try to pretend, greater will be the gap. The child is born one whole. And that's why every child is so beautiful. The beauty is because of wholeness. The child has no gap, no split, no divisions, no fragments. The child is one. The real and unreal are not there. The child is simply real, authentic. You cannot say the child is moral. Child is neither moral nor immoral. He is just unaware that there is something moral or immoral. The moment he becomes aware, a split starts. Then the child starts behaving in unreal ways. Because to be real becomes more and more difficult. Of necessity this happens, remember. Because the family has to regulate, the parents have to regulate. The child has to be civilized, educated, given manners, cultivated. Otherwise, it will be impossible for the child to move in the society. He has to be said, do this, don't do that. And when we say, do this, the child's reality may not be ready to do it. It may not be real. It may not have any real desire within the child to do it. And when you say, don't do this, or don't do that, the child's nature may like to do it. We condemn the real and we enforce the unreal, because the unreal is going to be helpful in an unreal society. And the unreal is going to be convenient. Where everyone is false, the real is not going to be convenient. A real child will be in basic difficulty with the society, because the whole society is unreal. This is a vicious circle. We are born in a society. And hitherto, not a single society has existed on earth which is real. And this is vicious. A child is born in a society, and the society is already there with its fixed rules, regulations, behaviors, moralities. The child has to learn. When he will grow, he will become false. The children will be born to him, and he will help make them false. And this goes on and on. What to do? We cannot change the society. Or if we try to change the society, we will not be there when the society will be changed. It will take eternal time. What to do? The individual can become aware of this basic split within, that the real has been suppressed and the unreal has been imposed. This is pain. This is suffering. This is hell. You cannot get any satisfaction through the unreal, because through the unreal, only unreal satisfactions are possible. And this is natural. Only through the real, real satisfaction can happen. Through the real, you can reach reality. Through the real, you can reach the truth. Through the unreal, you can reach more and more hallucinations, illusions, dreams. And through dreams, you can deceive yourself, but you can never be satisfied. For example, in a dream, if you feel thirsty, you may dream you are drinking water. This will be helpful and convenient for the sleep to continue. If this dream is not there, where you dream that you are drinking water, your sleep will be broken. A real thirst is there, it will break the sleep. The sleep will be disturbed. Dream is a help. It gives you the feeling that you are drinking water, but the water is false. Your thirst is simply deceived. It is not removed. You may continually sleep, but the thirst is there, suppressed. This is happening not only in sleep, in our whole life this is happening. You are searching things through the unreal personality, which is not there, just a facet. If you don't get them, you will be in misery. If you get them, then too you will be misery. In misery. If you don't get them, the misery will be lesser. Remember, if you get them, the misery will be deeper and more. Psychologists say that because of this unreal personality, we basically never want to reach the goals. Never want to reach, basically. Because if you reach the goal, you will be totally frustrated. We live in hope. In hope, we can continue. Hope is a dream. You never reach the goal, so you never come to realize that the goal is false. A poor man is struggling for riches is more happy in the struggle, because there is hope. And with the unreal personality, only hope is happiness. If the poor man gets the riches, he will become hopeless. Now, frustration will be the natural consequence. Riches are there, but no satisfaction. He has achieved the goal. Nothing has happened. His hopes are shattered. That's why the moment a society gets affluent, it becomes disturbed. If America is so much disturbed today, it is because hopes are achieved. Goals are achieved. And you cannot now see yourself more. So if in America the younger generation is revolting against all the goals of old generation, it is because of this. Because they all proved nonsense. In India, we cannot conceive this. We cannot conceive young people voluntarily going poor, hippie, voluntarily going poor. We cannot conceive. We have still hope. We are hoping in the future someday the country will become rich. And then there will be heaven. The heaven is always in the hope. Because of this unreal personality, Whatsoever you try, whatsoever you do, whatsoever you see becomes unreal. Tantra says that the truth can happen to you only if you are again grounded in the real. But to be grounded in the real, you have to be very courageous with your past. Because the unreal is convenient. And the unreal is so much cultivated, your mind is so much conditioned, that you will become afraid of the real. Someone has asked that you said yesterday to be in the love act totally, to enjoy it, to feel the bliss of it, to remain in it. And when the body starts shaking, be the shaking. So someone has asked, what are you teaching to us? Indulgence? This is perversion. This is the unreal personality speaking to you. The unreal personality is always against enjoying anything. It is always against you. You must not enjoy. It is always for sacrificing things, sacrificing you, sacrificing yourself for others. It looks beautiful because we have been brought up in it. Sacrifice yourself for others. This is altruism. If you are trying to enjoy yourself, this is selfish. And the moment someone says this is selfish, this becomes a sin. But I tell you, Tantra is a basically different approach. Tantra says, unless you can enjoy yourself, you cannot help anyone to enjoy. Unless you are really contented with yourself, you cannot serve others. You cannot help others towards their content. Unless you are overflowing with your own bliss, you are a danger to society. Because a person who sacrifices always becomes a sadist. If your mother goes on talking to you and saying that I have sacrificed myself to you, she will torture you. If the husband goes on saying to the wife that I am sacrificing, he will be a sadist torturer. He will torture. The sacrifice is just a trick to torture the other. So those who are always sacrificing are very dangerous, potentially dangerous. Be aware of them. And don't sacrifice. The very word is ugly. Enjoy yourself. Be bliss-filled. And when you are overflowing with your bliss, that bliss will reach to others also. But that is not a sacrifice. No one is obliged to you. No one needs to thank you. Rather, you will feel grateful to others because they have been participating in your bliss. Words like sacrifice, duty, service are ugly. They are violent. Tantra says, unless you are filled with light, how can you help others to be enlightened? Be selfish. Only then you can be altruistic. Otherwise, the whole concept of altruism is nonsense. Be happy. Only then you can help others to be happy. If you are sad, unhappy, bitter, you are going to be violent with others and you will create misery for others. You may become a Mahatma. That is not very difficult. But look at your Mahatmas. They are trying in every way to torture everyone, those who come to them. But their torturing is very deceptive. They torture you for your own self. They torture you for your own good. And because they are torturing themselves, you cannot say that you are preaching something to us which you are not practicing. They are practicing already. They are torturing themselves. Now they can torture you. And when a torture is for your own good, that is the most dangerous torture. You cannot escape it. And what is wrong in enjoying yourself? What is wrong in being happy? If there is anything wrong, it is always in your unhappiness. Because the unhappy person creates ripples all around him of unhappiness. Be happy. And sex act, love, can be one of the deepest through which bliss can be attained. Tantra is not preaching sexuality. It is simply saying that sex can be a source of bliss. And once you know that bliss, you can go further. Because now you are grounded in reality. One is not to remain with sex forever, but you can use sex as a jumping board. And that's what Tantra means. You can use it as a jumping board. And once you have known the ecstasy of sex, you understand what mystics have been talking about, of a greater orgasm, a cosmic orgasm. Meera is dancing. You cannot understand her. You cannot even understand her songs. They are sexual. The symbology is sexual. It is bound to be. Because in human life, sex act is the only act in which you come to feel a non-duality, in which you come to feel a deep oneness, in which the past disappears and the future disappears, and only the present moment remains the only real moment. So all those mystics who have really known oneness with the divine, oneness with existence itself, they have always used sexual terms and symbols for their experience to express it. There is no other symbology. There is no other symbology which comes nearer to it. Sex is just the beginning, not the end. But if you miss the beginning, you will miss the end also. And you cannot escape the beginning to reach the end. Tantra says, take life naturally. Don't be unreal. Sex is there, a deep possibility, a great potentiality. Use it. And what is wrong in being happy in it? All moralities are against happiness. Someone is happy and you feel something has gone wrong. When someone is sad, everything is okay. We live in a neurotic society where everyone is sad. When you are sad, everyone is happy because everyone can sympathize with you. When you are happy, everyone is at a loss what to do with you. When someone sympathizes with you, look at his face. The face gleams. A subtle shining comes to the face. He is happy. Sympathizing. If you are happy, then there is no possibility. Your happiness will create sadness into others. Your unhappiness creates happiness. This is neurosis. The very foundation seems to be mad. Tantra says be real, be authentic to yourself. Your happiness is not bad. It is good. It is not sin. Only sadness is sin. Only to be miserable is sin. To be happy is virtue. Because a happy person will not create unhappiness for others. Only a happy person is and can be a ground for others' happiness. Secondly, when I say Tantra is either moral or immoral, I mean Tantra is basically a science. It looks in you what you are. It doesn't mean that Tantra is not trying to transform you. But it transforms you through reality. The difference is just like magic and science. That is the same difference between morality and Tantra. Magic also tries to transform things just through words without knowing the reality. A magician can say that now the rains will stop. Really, he cannot stop. Or he will say, now rains will come. He cannot start. He can just go on using words. Sometimes coincidences will be there. And then he will feel powerful. And if the thing is not going to happen according to his magic prophecy, he can always say, what has gone wrong? That possibility is always hidden in his prophecy. With magic, everything starts with if. He can say, if everyone is good, virtuous, then the rains will come on that particular day. If the rains come, it is okay. If the rains are not coming, then everyone is not virtuous. There is someone who is a sinner. Even in this century, 20th century, and a person like Mahatma Gandhi could say, when there was famine in Bihar, he said, it is because of the sin of the people living in Bihar that the famine has come. As if the whole world is not sinning, only Bihar. Magic starts with if. And that if is great and big. Science never starts with if. Because science first tries to know what reality is, what the real is. Once the real is known, it can be transformed. Once you know what electricity is, it can be changed, transformed, used. A magician doesn't know what electricity is. Without knowing electricity, he is going to transform, thinking to transform. Those prophecies are just false illusions. Morality is just like magic. It goes on talking about the perfect man. And without knowing what man is, the real man, the perfect man remains as a dream. It is used just to condemn the real man. Man never reaches it. Tantra is science. Tantra says, first know what the reality is, what the man is. And don't create values, and don't create ideals right now. First know what is. Don't think of the art, just think of the is. And once the is known, you can change it. Now you have a secret. For example, Tantra says, don't try to go against sex. Because if you go against sex and try to create a state of brahmacharya, celibacy, purity, it is impossible. It is just magical. Without knowing what sex energy is, without knowing what sex is constituted of, without going deep into the reality of it, the secrets of it, you can create an ideal of brahmacharya. What you will do? You will simply suppress. And a person who is suppressing sex is more sexual than a person who is indulging in it. Because through indulgence, the energy is relieved. Through suppression, it is there, moving in your system continuously. A person who suppresses sex starts looking everywhere sex. Everything becomes sexual. Not that everything is sexual, but now he projects. Now he projects. His own hidden energy now is projected. He will look everywhere and he will see everywhere sex. And because he is condemning himself, he will start condemning everyone. You cannot find a moralist who is not violently condemning of everyone he is condemning. Everyone is wrong. It feels good. His ego is fulfilled. But why everyone is wrong? Because everywhere he sees the same thing he is suppressing. His own mind will become more and more sexual. And more he will be afraid. This brahmacharya is perversion. Unnatural. A different type of a different quality. A different type of brahmacharya happens to the follower of the tantra. But the very process is totally, diametrically opposite. Tantra first teaches how to move in sex, how to know it, how to feel it, and how to come to the deepest possibility hidden in it, to the climax. How to find out the essential beauty, the essential happiness and bliss that is hidden there. Once you know that secret, you can transcend it. Because really, in deep sexual orgasm, it is not sex which gives you bliss. It is something else. Sex is just a situation. Something else is giving you the euphoria, the ecstasy. That something else can be divided in three elements. But when I say and describe those elements, don't think that you can understand them. They must become part of your experience as concepts that live. Because of three basic elements in sex, you come to a blissful moment. Those three are first, timelessness. You transcend time completely. There is no time. You forget time completely. Time ceases for you. Not that time ceases. It ceases for you. You are not in it. There is no past, no future. This very moment here and now, the whole existence is concentrated. This moment becomes the only real moment. If you can make this moment the only real moment without sex, there is no need of sex. Through meditation, it happens. Secondly, in sex for the first time, you lose your ego. You become egoless. So all those who are very much egoistic, they are always against sex. Because in sex, they have to lose their ego. You are not. Neither the other is. You and your beloved both are lost into something else. A new reality evolves. A new unit comes into existence, in which the old two are lost, completely lost. The ego is afraid. You are no more there. If without sex you can come to a moment where you are not, then there is no need. And thirdly, for the first time in sex, you are natural. The unreal is lost. The facet, the face is lost. The society, the culture, the civilization is lost. You are part of nature as trees are, animals are, stars are. You are part of nature. You are in a greater something, the cosmos, the Tao. You are floating in it. You cannot even swim in it. You are not. You are just floating. You are taken by the current. These three things give you the ecstasy. Sex is just a situation in which it happens naturally. Once you know, and once you can feel these elements, you can create these elements independent of sex. All meditation is essentially the experience of sex without sex. But you have to go through it. It must become part of your experience, not concepts, not ideas, not thoughts. Tantra is not for sex. Tantra is to transcend. But you can transcend only through experience, existential experience, not knowledge. Only through Tantra, Brahmacharya happens. This looks paradoxical. But it is not. Only through knowledge, transcendence happens. Ignorance cannot help you for transcendence. It can help you only for hypocrisy. Now I will take the questions. Someone has asked, how often should one indulge in sex in order to help and not hinder the meditation process? The question arises because we go on misunderstanding. Your sex act and tantric sex act are basically different. Your sex act is to relieve. It is just like sneezing, a good sneeze. The energy is thrown out. You are unburdened. It is destructive. It is not creative. It is good, therapeutic. It helps you to be relaxed. But nothing more. Tantra sex act is basically diametrically opposite and different. It is not to relieve. It is not to throw energy out. It is to remain in the act without ejaculation, without throwing it out. remaining in the act merged. Just the beginning part of your act, not the end part. It changes the quality. Complete quality is different then. Try to understand two things. There are two types of climaxes, two types of orgasms. One type of orgasm is known. You reach to a peak of excitement. Then you cannot go further. The end has come. The excitement reaches to a point where it becomes non-voluntary. The energy jumps in you and goes out. You are relieved of it, unburdened. The load is thrown. You can relax and sleep. You are using it like a tranquilizer. It is a natural tranquilizer. A good sleep will follow. If your mind is not burdened by religion, then otherwise even the tranquilizer is destroyed. If your mind is not burdened by religion, only then sex can be a tranquilizing thing. If you feel guilt, your sleep will be disturbed. You will feel depression. You will start condemning yourself. And you will start taking oaths that now, no more. Your sleep will become a nightmare after it. If you are a natural being, not too much burdened by religion and morality, only then sex can be used as a tranquilizer. This is one type of orgasm coming to the peak of excitement. Tantra is centered on another type of orgasm. If we call it peak, you can call it valley. Not coming to the peak of excitement, but coming to the very deepest valley of relaxation. Excitement has to be used for both in the beginning. That's why I say in the beginning both are same, but the end are totally different. Excitement has to be used for both. Either you are going towards the peak of excitement or to the valley of relaxation. For the first, excitement has to be intense, more and more intense. You have to grow in it. You have to help it to grow towards the peak. In the second, excitement is just the beginning. And once the man has entered, the both lover and beloved can relax. No movement is needed. They can relax in a loving embrace. When the man feels or the woman feels that the erection is going to be last, only then a little movement and excitement. But again, relax. You can prolong this deep embrace for hours. No ejaculation. And then both can fall into a deep sleep together. This is a valley orgasm. Both are relaxed. And they meet as two relaxed beings. In ordinary sexual orgasm, you meet as two excited beings. Tense. Full of excitement. Trying to unburden themselves. Ordinary sexual orgasm looks like mad. Tantra orgasm is a deep, relaxing meditation. Then there is no question. How often should one indulge? As much as you like, because no energy, rather energy is gained. you may not be aware, but this is a fact of biology, bioenergy, that men and women are opposite forces, negative, positive, yin, yang, or whatsoever you call them. They are challenging to each other. And when they both meet in a deep relaxation, they revitalize each other. They both vitalize each other. They both become younger. They both feel livelier. They both become radiant with new energy. And nothing is lost. Just by meeting the opposite pole, energy is renewed. Tantra love act can be done as much as you like. Ordinary sex act cannot be done as much as you like, because you are losing energy and your body will have to wait to regain, and only when you regain you can lose it again. And this looks absurd, the whole life regaining and losing, gaining and losing. It is just like an obsession. Second thing to be remembered, you may have observed or may not have observed. If you look at animals, you will never see that they are enjoying. In intercourse, they are not enjoying. Look, baboons, monkeys, dogs, or any. In their sex act, you cannot observe they are feeling blissful or enjoying it. You cannot. It seems just a mechanical act, a natural force pushing them towards it. If you have seen monkeys in intercourse, after the intercourse, they will separate. Look at their faces, there is no ecstasy. Nothing has happened as if. When the energy forces, when the energy is too much, they throw it. Ordinary sex act is just like this. And moralists have been saying quite the contrary. They said, don't indulge, don't enjoy. They said, this is like animals. This is not. Animals never enjoy. Only men can enjoy. And the deeper you can enjoy, a higher humanity is born to you. And if your sex act can become meditative, ecstatic, the highest is touched. But remember Tantra. It is a valley orgasm. It is not a peak experience. It is a valley experience. In the West, Abraham Maslow has made this word peak experience very famous. You go in excitement towards the peak and then you fall. That's why after every sex act, you feel a fall and a depression. You are falling from a peak. You will never feel that after a tantra sex experience. You are not falling. You cannot fall more. You have been in the valley. Rather, you are rising. When you come back after a tantra sex act, you have risen, not fallen. You feel filled with energy, more vital, more alive, radiant. And that ecstasy will last for hours, even for days. It depends how deep you were in it. And if you can go move in it, sooner or later you will realize ejaculation is a wastage of energy. No need, unless you need children. And you will feel a deep relaxation the whole day. One tantra sex experience, and for days you will feel relaxed, at ease, at home. Non-violent, non-angry, non-depressed. And this type of person is never a danger to others. If he can, he will help others to be happy. If he cannot, at least he will not make anyone unhappy. Only Tantra can create a new man. And this man, who has known timelessness, egolessness, and a deep non-duality with existence, will grow now. A dimension has opened. It is not far away, the day is not very far away, when sex will simply disappear. When sex disappears without your knowledge, suddenly one day you realize that sex has disappeared completely and there is no lust. Brahmacharya is born. But this is arduous. Looks arduous because of too much false teaching. And you feel afraid also. Because of your mind conditioning. Of two things we are very much afraid, sex and death. And both are basic. And a really religious seeker will enter both. He will experience sex to know what it is, because to know sex is to know life. And he will also like to know what death is, because unless death is known, you cannot know what eternal life is. If I can enter sex to its very center, I know what life is. And if I can enter into death voluntarily to its very center, the moment I touch the center of death, I have become eternal. Now I am immortal. Because death is something that happens just on the periphery. Sex and death both are basic for a real seeker. But for ordinary humanity, both are taboo. Don't talk about them. And both are basic, and both are deeply related. They are so deeply related that even entering sex, you enter a certain death, because you are dying. The ego is disappearing. Time is disappearing. Your individuality is disappearing. You are dying. Sex is also a subtle death. And if you can know that sex is a subtle death, death can become a great sex orgasm. A Socrates entering death is not afraid. Rather, he is very much enthusiastic, thrilled, excited, what death is. A deep welcome. Why? Because if you have known the small death of sex, and you have known the bliss that follows it, you would like to know the greater death, a greater bliss is hidden behind it. But for us, both are taboo. For Tantra, both are basic searching dimensions. One has to go through them. Someone has asked, if one experiences meditation as a rising of Kundalini up the spinal passage, does not it deplete one's meditative energies to have orgasm? All the questions are basically without understanding what Tantra sex act is. Ordinarily it is so. If your energy goes up, rises your Kundalini, and rushes up towards the head, you cannot have ordinary orgasm. And if you try to have, you will be in a deep conflict within, because energy is moving up and you are forcing it down. But Tantra orgasm is not a difficulty, it will be a help. Energy moving up is not contradictory to Tantra orgasm. You can relax, and that relaxation with your beloved will help to energy move higher. In ordinary sex act, it is a difficulty. That's why all those techniques which are not tantric, they are against sex, because they don't know that a valley agas is possible. They know only one ordinary agas, and then it is a problem for them. For yoga, it is a problem, because yoga is trying to force your sex energy upwards. It is called Kundalini, your sex energy moving upwards. In sex act, it moves downwards. Yoga will say that be a celibate, because if you are doing both, you are creating chaos into your system. On the one hand, trying to pull energy up, and on the other hand, throwing energy out, down, you are creating chaos. That's why yoga techniques are against sex. But Tantra is not against sex, because Tantra has a different type of agas, a valley agas, which can help. And there is no chaos, no conflict created. Rather, it will be helpful. If you are escaping, if you are man and escaping women, and if you are women escaping men, whatsoever you do, the other remains in your mind and goes on pulling you down. This is paradoxical, but this is a truth. While in deep embrace with your beloved, you can forget the other. Only then you forget the other. A man forgets that a woman exists. A woman forgets that man exists. Only in deep embrace, the other is no more. And when the other is no more, your energy can flow easily. Otherwise, the other goes on pulling it down. So yoga and ordinary techniques escape from the other. The other sex, they have to escape, be aware, continuously struggling and controlling. But if you are against the other sex, that very againstness is a constant strain and goes on pulling you down. Tantra says no strain is needed. Be relaxed with the other. In that relaxed moment, the other disappears and your energy can flow up. But it flows up only when you are in a valley. It flows down when you are at a peak. One question more. Last night you said that sexual acts should be slow and unhurried. But you also said that one should not have any control over the sexual act, and one should become total. It confuses me. It is not a control. Control is a totally different thing. And relaxation is different. You are relaxing in it, not controlling it. If you are controlling it, there will be no relaxation. If you are controlling it, sooner or later you will be hurried to finish it. Because control is a strain. And every strain creates tension. And tension creates a necessity, a need to release. It is not a control. You are not resisting something. You are simply not in a hurry. Because sex it is not to move somewhere. You are not going somewhere. It is just a play. There is no goal. Nothing is to be reached. So why hurry? But man is always in his every act present totally. If you are hurried in everything, you will be hurried in your sex act also. Because you will be there. A person who is very much time conscious will be hurried in his sex act also, as if time is being wasted. So we asked for instant coffee and for instant sex. But with coffee it is good. With sex it is simply nonsense. There can be no instant sex. It is not work. And it is not something which you can hurry. Through hurry you will destroy it. You will miss the very point. Enjoy it, because through it a timelessness is to be felt. If you are in hurry, then timelessness cannot be felt. When Tantra says, go unhurriedly, slowly, enjoying, just as if you have gone for a walk in the morning, not going to the office, that is a different thing. When you are going to the office, you are in a hurry to reach somewhere. And when you are on a walk in the morning, you are not in a hurry because you are not going anywhere. You are simply going. There is no hurry, there is no goal. You can return from any point. This unhurriedness is basic to create the valley. Otherwise the peak will be created. And when this is said, it does not mean that you have to control. You are not to control your excitement. Because that is contradictory. You cannot control excitement. If you control, you are creating a double excitement. Just relax. Take it as a play. Don't make any end. The beginning is enough. In the act, close your eyes, feel the other's body, feel the other's energy flowing towards you, and be merged in it. Melt in it. It will come. The old habit may persist for a few days. It will go. But don't force it to go. Just go on relaxing, relaxing, relaxing. And if there is no ejaculation, don't feel that something has gone wrong. Because the man feels that something has gone wrong. If there is no ejaculation, he feels something has gone wrong. Nothing has gone wrong. And don't feel that you have missed something. You have not missed. In the beginning it will be felt like missing something because the excitement and the peak will not be there. And before the valley comes, you will feel that you are missing something. But this is just an old habit. Within a period, within a month, 3 weeks, the valley will start appearing. And when the valley appears, you will forget your peaks. No peak is worth then. But you have to wait. And don't force it. And don't control. Just relax. Relaxation is a problem. Because when we say relax, in the mind, it is translated as if some effort is to be made. Because our language gives the appearance. I was reading one book. The book is entitled, You Must Relax. The must. The very must will not allow you to relax. Because then it becomes a goal, you must. And if you are not able, you will feel frustrated. The very must gives you a feeling of hard effort, an arduous journey. You cannot relax if you are thinking in terms of must. Language is a problem. For certain things, language always expresses them wrongly. For example, relaxation. If I say to relax, then too it becomes an effort. And you will ask how to relax. And how, you miss the point. You cannot ask how. You are asking for a technique. Technique will create effort. Effort will create tension. So if you ask me how to relax, I will say, don't do anything. Just relax. Just lie down and wait. Don't do anything. All that you can do will be the barrier. It will create the hindrance. If you start in counting from 1 to 100 and back from 100 to 1, you will remain awake the whole night. And if sometimes you have fallen asleep because of counting, it is not because of counting. It's because you counted and counted and then you got bored. Because of that boredom. It is not because of counting. Only because of boredom. And then you forgot counting and the sleep came. But sleep comes only, relaxation comes only, when you are not doing anything. And this is the problem. When I say sex act, it becomes, looks like an effort. It is not. Just start playing with your beloved or your lover. Just go on playing, feel each other, be sensitive to each other. Just like small children playing. Or just dogs playing, animals playing. Just go and play. and don't think about sex act at all. It may happen, it may not happen. If it happens through just playing, it will lead you to the valley more easily. If you think about it, then you are already ahead of you. You are playing with your beloved, but you are thinking of the sex act. And the playing is false. You are not here. And the mind is in the future. And this mind will move always in the future. When you are in the sex act, the mind is thinking how to finish it. It is always ahead of you. Don't allow it. Just play and forget about any sex act. It will happen. Allow it to happen. Then it will be easy to relax. And when it happens, just relax. Be together. Be in each other's presence and feel happy. Negatively, something can be done. For example, when you get excited, you breathe fast. Because excitement needs fast breathing. For relaxation, it is good, helpful, if you breathe deep, not fast, slow. Breathing so easily at ease. Then the sex act can be prolonged. Don't talk. Don't say anything. Because that creates disturbance. Don't use mind, use bodies. Use mind only to feel what is happening. Don't think, just feel what is happening. The warmth that is flowing, the love that is flowing, the energy that is in contact. Just feel it, be aware of it. And that too should not be made a strain, effortlessly floating. Then only the valley will appear. And once the valley appears, you are transcending. Once you feel and realize the valley, the relaxed orgasm, it is already a transcendence. The sex is not now, it has become a meditation, a samadhi. Enough for today.